What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Real Bodybuilding Podcast. This is episode number 113, and today is the strongest day ever on the Real Bodybuilding Podcast. I have Mr. Tom Stoltman here. How are you, sir? This is the world's strongest man now. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm the world's strongest. I'm good. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it feels nice to be the world's strongest man, you know, and taking it back to Scotland, first time ever it's been here. So yeah, it feels good.
How old are you, man?
So I'm 27 years old, so I'm still the young pups of the sport still. So.
27 years old. Look, I want to start off the podcast by saying I don't know very much about strongman. I've watched some of it on TV and it's like super interesting, but I don't know all the ins and outs of it. So hopefully you can teach me some about that, some of that today. But at 27 years old, you're now call yourself the world's strongest man. Is that crazy? Like, you're the strongest guy in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sink in. You know, I used to watch this when I was a kid with my family, and used to watch these guys and be like, you know, these guys are supermen, you know, like, how are they lifting cars? How are they pulling trains, planes? I was like, this bamboozled me, you know, and then, you know, it's like, I watched that 10 years later, I'm standing here as the world's strongest man. It's like, it's cool. It's a manly title. It's a prestigious title. And yeah, man, it's not really sunk in yet. You know, I've not had much time to kind of have a chill and, you know, spend it with my family and stuff. But yeah, it feels awesome, you know, to be a 27-year-old kind of normal guy and just have this title. It's prestigious to me, man.
Have you done any celebrating? What did you do after your one? Like, did you drink for like the whole weekend, or what did you do?
Yeah, so as soon as the comp was over, there was an after party over at in America. You know, Brian Shaw's kind of food supplement company put something on for us. So
yeah,
I got very drunk out there. The heat and drink don't go very well, you know, and whiskey as well. So and then,
how much does it take for a guy? You're 6'8", right?
6'8", yeah.
How much do you weigh?
I weigh 180 kilograms, which
it's like 300, I think it's like 380 or 390 pounds, something like that.
Yeah.
So almost 400 pounds. So what does it take for a 400-pound guy to get drunk? How much do you drink?
To be honest, in America, it was not too much because of the heat. And I mean, started off solely on the beers, two or three of them, and then it went straight to the whiskey shots. So I woke up, and then I woke up in bed. I didn't even remember going back to the hotel. So it was a messy night. I think all of us had a bit too much to drink, you know, and then had to catch a plane home. But then when I got back to the UK, my family had put on kind of a big celebration for me and my with my friends and stuff. So that was nice, you know, to kind of, I sacrificed a lot, you know, the 7 months up to Worlds. So it was nice to kind of just chill and let my hair down and, you know, celebrate kind of properly with all them. So
you say 7 months to prep. Can you kind of walk me through, like, what is that? Like, when we prep for in the bodybuilding world, when we prep for a show, we usually give ourselves 3 to 4 months to kind of prep for a show and get all the fat off and all that. When you say 7 months for the strongman competition, what is that 7 months leading up? How does, like, what's the main focus? Obviously to get stronger, but how else does it work?
Yeah, so basically, obviously, like, so I came second place last year in November. And basically, as soon as I touched back down in UK, I was already thinking about World's Strongest Man 2021. I addressed all my weaknesses that I had in November out there last year, bought all the specialist equipment I needed, and then, you know, kind of took it from there. Talked to my coaches and my nutritionist and just sat down for a week or so and, like, planned everything out, what I needed to do, what I needed to kind of eat, etc. And then I actually as well signed up with kind of someone that helps with, like, the mental kind of side of this strongman game. You know, physically, I've always been physically strong and able, but mentally, I've kind of lacked a bit of that and not believed in myself and stuff. So this was to help me go past that, like, pain barrier and, you know, to kind of never give up when things are getting sore, hard, et cetera, et cetera. And then I actually had a competition in March for World Ultimate Strongman out in Bahrain. So what I did was we used that as kind of a warm up and kind of to see if I was comp fit. And, you know, so I went into there weighing probably about 400 pounds, just about. And then I was feeling kind of very unfit, you know, losing breath easily, a lot of fat on me that I didn't need. And that was probably the best kind of thing I'd done, because coming back from that, I then, you know, re-talked to my coaches, my nutritionists, and said, right, I've got March to June to kind of change myself and be the best in the world. So I kind of just did 8 to 10 weeks of fitness. So it was like the first 2 months was a lot of kind of like bodybuilding kind of, you know, workouts, like high reps, you know, 12 to 15 rep range, a lot of kind of hit and high intensity cardio. And my diet was a bit more cleaner. You know, it was, I was on about 8,000 calories, which is maintenance for me. So I was staying at that, but it was a lot of just the clean food. And then once I kind of got that fitness to where I wanted it, I knew then, by then, you know, World's Strongest Man, the past few years has been, you know, you have to be strong, but you have to be fit as well. So I knew that my fitness was 100%. Then it was then to catch my strength up with my fitness. And so then I reversed everything, basically. You know, I took the kind of conditioning out and just did that once a week, and then started doing 3 to 5 reps, you know, and the kind of Monday to Friday was the gym stuff, and then the Saturday was the strongman day, so the event day, you know, where you do the 5-6 events on the weekend.
So did you come from, so actually going back to that, so you worked on, you're known as one of the faster guys, I guess, right? Like you're in the strongman events. So when you came back and you were heavier, when you say you did cardio, were you doing cardio on like treadmills and machines, or are you doing any running outside, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it was the HIIT stuff. So it was like assault bikes, cross trainers, and then the skier. And then like, you know, like say the, and then we do some, maybe we some CrossFit exercises, like clean and jerks and stuff like that. So it was all just to keep the heart racing, you know, and the short rest time. So I was able to kind of recover between each set, which then really helped me to then, you know, get that fitness back up to where it should be. And then the strength just had, I only needed another 8 weeks to get the strength kind of back up to the top. So yeah, I mean, for me, the most important thing for me was, you know, recovery, I always say, is the key, you know. I mean, for me, the gym for me is like the second most important, maybe in the third, I think it's diet, recovery, you know, gym.
Yeah.
And like my gym prep wasn't always the best, you know, I had a lot of kind of bad days, but my recovery and nutrition was always on point. I always made sure I was like obsessed with that. And again, I wrote everything down. Yeah, I wrote everything down. So like, I had a big whiteboard in my kitchen saying, World's Strongest Man 21, World's Strongest Man 21. So I could visualize what my goal was. And for me, that really helped me as well, because, you know, sometimes you wake up and you're like, why am I doing this to myself? You know, there's days where you can't really be bothered going to the gym, doing this and that. And like I said, I had a lot of them days, but I looked at that board and was like, right, I've got 8 more weeks to do this and I'll be the best in the world. And I really kind of, every training session, I believed I was the best in the world before I even went out there.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I kept going how I've been going, then I was going to be the best. So yeah, I just did all that. So probably about 16 weeks of proper kind of training to help me get to the World's Strongest Man, and then the recovery and nutrition on top of that as well.
So can I ask you, so you said you had a few coaches, how many coaches do you have, like, and for what different things do you have?
Yeah, so I have a coach for obviously the training, and then I have a nutritionist, Nathan Payton from America. So then, and then I have that kind of, I don't really know her specific name, but like the mental, for the mental kind of side of things.
So it's like a sports coach maybe, or like a sports psychologist?
She's called Amy there. And then I obviously have my kind of physio. So those are the three main kind of people on my team that really do help me get that, like obviously the whole package. But those are the three guys that I go to kind of obviously listen to and do the kind of out the gym stuff. Yeah.
So I find that really interesting, because nobody would think that the World's Strongest Man has any doubts or issues like that, which is amazing, because, you know, I talk about that all the time on my show, because I saw a sports psychologist myself. You said you used to wake up and have days where you weren't sure why you were doing it, but you were second last year. So even though you were second last year, you still had some of those doubts. Like where is that coming when you're so close? How people would be shocked to think when you're so close that you still have doubts. Where is that coming from?
I believed I was the strongest there, but it was the mistakes that I was making. I was making mistakes in my game, you know, every kind of comp, I was just making these wee mistakes that were costing me a title or costing me, you know, the first, second place, whatever. So
can you give me an example? Sorry to interrupt you. Can you give me an example of like one of the mistakes?
So basically, the first event last year of the final was you had to pick up an awkward shaped kind of implement and then run it onto a barrel, then do a yoke run. And I was picking up the awkward shaped thing, and just as I about to put it on the barrel, I slipped out my hand. So I ended up going from coming first in that event to maybe fifth or sixth. And then, you know, when I look back at the leaderboard, you know, I finished 2 points behind first. And if I go back to that event and didn't slip, I would have won World's Strongest Man. So, like, those were things going through my head. It's like, yeah, I'm making these stupid, stupid mistakes on the most crucial things. Yeah. And that's what I was saying about the mental stuff. Like, it's something that would play with me for a while. Like, how am I, you know, I just couldn't get it out of my head that, like, I was making these wee mistakes. So that's why I kind of always had, sometimes had those wee doubts where I was maybe in the gym. And again, as well, my grip wasn't the best either. I was saying, like, I couldn't go past, like, the pain barrier. Last year as well, we did this kind of thing. We had to hold a kind of thing, straight arms right in, to the side of you. And as soon as the pain kind of came, I just dropped it, you know. And again, that was another thing that cost me the title. So that's why I went kind of back into the gym, and I was kind of like, you know, why am I making these mistakes? Why do I keep kind of putting my body through this pain and stuff and waking up doing stuff?
What is, how do you, that's actually, I always thought the pain barrier was like a kind of metaphorical thing, or like a, I didn't think it was a real thing. So you experience the pain barrier and they teach you how to actually get through it.
Yeah. So that, Amy, the psychologist, the course. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I was always saying, like, my left hand was going, or I couldn't do this, couldn't do that, and I just drop it. And then as soon as I started working with her, I mean, like, I'm going to places I've never been before. I'm holding things that I've kind of never, ever, like, held for time in my life. And I'm, like, it's right onto my fingertips, and I can feel the pain, but I'm still, like, squeezing it more. Yeah. And it's just mental how your mind kind of switches from, you know, not believing in yourself to believing in yourself. And if you say you can do something, you'll do it. When as soon as you say that word can't, you just can't do it. And that's what I was saying, like last year at World's Strongest Man. I was saying I couldn't do a lot of things. And then this year I said, you know, I turned myself into that champion's mindset that, you know, I can do anything I want when I want. So
how does he, that's interesting to me because it sounds so simple, but I know it's not. How do you go from not believing in yourself to believing in yourself? Like, you know, like, obviously she worked with you in different ways, but what is it that triggered all of a sudden the belief?
I mean, I think it's also like last year as well, they've been so close to, you know, being the best in the world. And that made me really, really hungry, you know, like, because of my mistakes, I knew that, like, I need to go back in. And I was so, so hungry. As soon as I landed in the UK, like I said, I was hungry just to get straight back on plan and have that 8 months of just work, like, strongman. And yeah, that's when my kind of mind changed from, like, right, I can't do this, I can't do that, to, but I can do anything I want. I'm the best in the world. I kept saying I was the best in the world. I was the best at this event. I was saying that I was the best at every single strongman event. And then when I went with Amy, the lady, she then started just to tell me to say, like, some buzzwords. So telling me to, like, you know, say, be aggressive on each event, be aggressive, or get angry. And then that kind of switched my mind to get angry and really, really attack the event. Like, it was, you know, like, my wife was under it, or my family would, you know, die if I didn't lift it up. So it was kind of those dark, dark thoughts that really helped me get to being, like, the kind of champion and, like, that different approach to the gym kind of style and stuff.
You don't seem like you're a very angry person normally, though.
No, 100%. That's what the problem was. You know, I'm, like, even before with her, I was always going into the gym kind of really relaxed, really chilled. Sometimes that's a good thing, but most of the time you want to get that kind of, you know, 2 minutes of the anger to kind of rip the stuff off the floor. And that's what I was struggling with, you know. So
is that, I'm assuming then, what was like your childhood like? Everything was, yeah, what was your family like? How many siblings, mom and dad in the house, all that normal?
Yeah, so basically I've got autism, Asperger syndrome, you know. So I've had that since I've been 6-7 years old. So
can you, again, before you go on, can you explain what that is?
So autism is Asperger syndrome. It's kind of like it's kind of like ADHD. Like I don't know if you know what ADHD is. It's kind of like that, but not the kind of hyper anger kind of side. I mean, there's all different levels of autism. You can start from, like, the mild stuff all the way up to the kind of really extreme. And when I was a kid, I had like the in-between kind of one. So like I was misbehaving. I didn't mature to a later age. I was really shy. I locked myself in the room. So it's kind of like, it's a disability you can't see, you know? And, you know, people label you and be like, oh, why is this kid doing this? Why is this kid doing that? You know, so that was really hard for me. I mean, I think I got diagnosed when I was a really young boy. And I mean, my mom and dad, I had four other siblings. So I had two brothers, I have two sisters. And, you know, they were all so supportive. I mean, my sister worked on that kind of job, you know, the looking after people with the additional needs and stuff. So they were already kind of clued up with kind of what was going on. But, you know, for me in my head, as a child of like having this kind of stuff and locking myself in the room and going to shops and like hitting things off the shelf, you know, it was a really kind of hard thing for, you know, my mum and that to experience. And for me to be accepted in like with my childhood and stuff, my mum and dad had to film me, you know, doing these behaviors and acting up and stuff to then get diagnosed and get help. So, you know, it went to an extreme that I had to physically get filmed to, you know, for people to believe that I had this illness, which, you know, is not a nice thing for any one son or daughter to go through.
So your parents would film you?
Yeah.
Doing these things?
Yeah. So like they wouldn't diagnose me or they wouldn't get help until they physically had evidence on CD or setting off on film, sorry, of me getting like abusive or, you know, fighting or whatever, you know, and this kind of stuff. And that's all like, and then locking myself in the room. So that was kind of a really hard thing as well, because, you know, my mom and dad were, you know, sad and that no one believed that I had this kind of disability, you know. And then going through, so then kind of sport was the thing that saved my life as well, because like even when I was younger, I played a lot of football, soccer in America.
Yeah, in America,
I played a lot of that, and that was the thing that kept me going. You know, I didn't, even in primary school, I wasn't the kind of most educational. My primary school was really small, so a lot of all my mates played soccer and football, so, you know, we were really close and everything. But it wasn't really until I hit 14, 15 years old was when I said to one of my teachers that I want to tell all my friends that I've got this illness, additional needs. So
before you go on, how old were you when you got diagnosed?
Yeah, I was 6 or 7 years old. So
six or seven. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you carried that diagnosis of you carried it from 6 or 7 all the way to 14 without telling anybody.
Yeah. So basically the reason I did tell people, because in my primary school, we were all just hyper kids and everything anyway. So like I felt normal there because obviously kids were doing the same as me. Yeah. And then obviously transfer going from that school to the bigger school, and that's when I was like, right, there's triple the amount of people in here. I'm getting taken out of class, getting extra support, not turning up in school on days. And a lot of people were asking, like, why is Tom, you know, doing this? Why is Tom doing that?
Okay.
And that really played in my head as well, because I was like, thought everyone else is being normal and I'm not. So that's when I said to one of my teachers, like, I want to tell people that what I've got and stuff. And I did that. And as soon as I did that, a weight lifted off my shoulders and they respected me for who I was. And, you know, like, cause I was really scared, because obviously I thought they'd turn their backs and go, oh, we don't want to know you. We don't like you and stuff. But they were also supportive. And, like, it was mental how, like, that weight just came off my shoulders and it felt like I was a normal person, you know. And
I think one of the things, so I dealt with a lot of social anxiety in my early 20s. And one of the things, that weight that you talk about being lifted off your shoulders, the very first time I felt that was when people would ask, because I would sit down to dinner and let's say I would start sweating or something. I'd get really uncomfortable. I wanted to go. I just wanted to be alone. I wanted to get out of the room and not be around anybody. And once I was able to tell people, I all of a sudden felt better.
Like, 100%.
I was like, I'm just having an anxiety attack. I'll be okay. Yeah. And then people kind of, it's almost like they're more supportive of it. So
100%, because like I hated saying that I was shy, because I wasn't shy. I just hated like hiding it and saying I was shy, because I just wasn't. And that was the thing that was really eating at me. Like, oh, like one of my parents just said, oh, he's just a shy boy. And it's like, I'm not shy. I've got this strong in me. So so as soon as I said that, it was very good, you know, because then I was able to react, interact with people more and stuff. And then basically leaving school, you know, was hard. I was in and out of jobs, you know, out of college and stuff. And then my big brother was like, he was into the bodybuilding kind of scene already. He's 10 years older than me. So about 16 years old, he said, all my mates had left to go to away to the unis and stuff. And there was no like footwear stock anymore. So I did kind of, I was going backwards. I kind of started locking myself into my room again and not really talking to anyone. So that's when brother said, I'll come to the gym and, you know, see how you like it and stuff. And, you know, he took me to the gym and, you know, the first few days I had my head down, don't talk to anyone. I was just talking to my brother and lifting the weights, you know. And like I hated every minute of it, you know, I hated being around people. I hated the mirrors, you know, like them staring at me and stuff, because I was a really, really skinny boy as well, like really skinny. Like I said, no confidence, nothing, just so that. And then I started just kept going. Usually when I find things hard, I would just quit it and, you know, go back to being in my room and stuff. But I really wanted to give it a go, you know. And
Did your brother keep you going? Is that why you kept going back?
Yeah, so my big brother really kept me going. He was basically my coach at the start of it all. Because obviously he knew what the autism was and how I had it. So he knew how to kind of, he went down to kind of my level and slowed everything right down and taught me it like in, say, 10 steps instead of 2 steps, you know. So he went to that and he wrote everything down, because I can visualize more things when I write. So he did all that kind of stuff for me and took my time. So he really cared and wanted me to kind of grow as a person, not just in the gym, but out. So within like 3 or 4 months in the gym, I kind of started seeing a bit more changes, started talking to people, had my head up, started just like, because my brother at this time worked away on like the oil rig. So when he was away, he didn't want me to not go to the gym. So he introduced me to a few people and I started going with them. And then everything just kind of grew from there. You know, I kind of started getting really confident, seeing changes in my body. And when I seen that change in my body, I just got addicted. You know, I was like, this is so good for my autism, so good for like the mental kind of side of things, and just kept me, you know, it kept me having a purpose in life. You know, I knew that I was coming to the gym every day, what I was eating, when I was going to bed, and it was that routine. People with autism need a routine, and that's what the gym gives me. There's no better kind of sport to do than, you know, strongman bodybuilding, and it has a routine. So, you know, every single day I was doing the same thing, and then I entered, my brother entered me into a competition at 18 years old, Scotland's Strongest Man, without me knowing. So
how long had you been training before he entered you?
About a year and a bit. So, so I was just like, oh, well, thanks for that. You know, like the big, I was like maybe a junior level, but yeah, anyway, I did that and then came fifth at that. And then the thing then that struggled before with Strongman was when I started getting bigger, it was the interviews and the cameras that started then coming into play. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know Strongman had this kind of stuff in it. I thought it was just football and rugby and stuff. So then that's when Luke came in and he really helped me. You know, he started talking to people at first for me and stuff and doing interviews. But then I was like, look, I can't use Luke all the time. You know, I need to get over this hurdle like I've done getting into the gym and stuff. So what I did was I used the gym as a studio kind of thing and put loads of lights in, got loads of people to ask me questions and used like fake noise of a crowd to kind of get used to the noise and get used to people talking to me. And you know, that's what I like. Usually I said when I'm in uncomfortable situations, I usually take myself out of that, but I wanted to put myself into the uncomfortable situation and kind of do it for myself. And that's what I did. So like every interview that I was doing, I was getting better and better and better. And that was just because I was wanting to kind of improve, you know, improve myself, because I didn't want this strongman thing to kind of end, because you know, I knew I was good at strongman, I just wasn't good at the interviews and the talking, and you know, my head was down, like I said. So
how long did your brother do the talking for you? Like how many interviews, how many years, how many months went by where your brother's name is Luke, right?
Yeah, Luke.
So I watched some of your guys' YouTube videos. He seems like a great guy, but how long did he kind of be your voice?
Yeah, I mean, he was actually my voice for maybe the first maybe two and a half years, you know. It was quite a long time, maybe even 3 years, you know, because, I mean, I would talk and say the odd, like, sentence here and there, and, you know, hey, you know, hello, how are you? And then just head down, and he would, like, I would eat dinner, and he'd do, that's him talking. So it was quite a long process to get me from getting, like, one word to then talking, you know. But, I mean, that's the thing. All the strong men understood what I had. All the presenters knew, you know, that I was, you know, that had autism and stuff, and they really just said, look, Tom, take your time. We're not here to kind of intimidate you, upset you. You just do what you want. You answer as many questions as you want, and that's it. So
it seems like the strongman community is like very tight knit. Like you guys all seem like you're friends. Is that true?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because we, it's like with bodybuilders, so you know exactly what they put their body through, you know. And I mean, it's like, you know, when someone deadlifts a certain amount of weight, everybody's buzzing for them. When someone's, you know, wins a show, everyone's buzzing for them. And it's because, you know, it's not like people think it's a 1 year, 2 year thing, but it's like 11, 12 years of hard work, sacrifice, and, you know, not spending time with your family and stuff that gets you to that stage. And everybody just appreciates you for that. And Strongman's a big family. So
I can't imagine a time when you couldn't speak for yourself, because this interview seems like you're doing all the talking, which is great. But what I want to know, what happened like after the 2 years? You said your brother was speaking for you, because this is like a crazy thing, man. A lot of people go through these type of feelings, this type of anxiety, this type of, I know you said it wasn't shyness and it's not anxiety, you have, you know, a different thing, but I think a lot of people can relate in a different way. What was it that made you finally just force yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to start talking? And then how hard was it when you did start talking?
Yeah, well, that's what I said. You know, I forced myself just because I knew I was good at strongman, and I knew that. And I bet in my head, I always thought, like, you know, if I don't do these interviews or get myself out there, then I'm never going to be able to take it to that next step. And like I said, I was like 20, 21 at the time. And, you know, I can't have Luke talking for me at 20, 21 years old. You know, it's at the end of the day, I've got autism, but I need to be able to push myself. You know, Luke can't go and baby me and lift the weights and that for me as well. So I thought, you know, like, right, I'm going to, that's why I did the stuff in the gym. And I suggested that idea and did it myself, because I wanted to put, you know, grow myself as a, to get more confident, to help me speak in front of cameras and stuff. And I know, and then when I did my first interview after that, people were like, right, Tom, take your time, you don't need to talk. But then I just blossomed and was like, they were like, you know, geez, what's happening? Luke's not saying a word now. You're now not shutting up. What's happening? You know, it's just, I just have to have a lot of kind of practice with a lot of things to then get comfortable, you know. And that's what I kind of just did. I just kept putting myself in uncomfortable situations that I would never put myself in like 7 or 8 years ago, and just kept on getting over this hurdle. So
how uncomfortable was your first interview? Like, when people say, you know, that there's a common phrase now, everybody says you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And it's just, people just throw it away. Like it doesn't mean anything. But for people that have any type of mental issue or any type of issue, it's not easy to just put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. So the first interview you agreed to, how hard was it to actually do it? And then how long was the interview?
Well, I think it was that UK Strongest Man was the one I can remember. And that was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever done in my life, because it wasn't just me in the room. It was, obviously, this was going on like TV, and then there was like 8 or 9 other athletes queuing, watching me while I was trying to talk. And then there was like 5 or 6 coming, and I ended up having to kind of run out the room, you know. I just couldn't, like,
did you really?
Yeah, I just couldn't, like, face it. And then the nice thing for afterwards is what they let all the other athletes go first, and then they brought me back in afterwards and kind of took, like, put less people in the room. So then I got used to it. But they knew after that not to start me hundreds of people.
Everybody, yeah.
But yeah, that was the thing. You know, that's just the thing I couldn't kind of cope with. But then they, you know, helped me kind of build my confidence up slowly, slowly, slowly. So yeah, the first interview call was, not a nice situation.
So I tell people when they have issues like this, that you have to not beat yourself up about it if you kind of make a mistake. So like that first one where you left the room and you had to come back, like, did you give yourself a pass? You're like, you know, it's okay that happened, and then just keep moving forward.
You know, I still, like I said, I still wasn't mentally good then, you know, with the stuff, like with all this kind of talk and stuff, but I kind of thought I let myself down. I just kind of, it did beat me up, you know, it beat me up for a while. Cause I was like, geez, you know, it's just talking. Like, I can go and lift loads and loads of weight, but I can't go and talk and then answer 4 simple questions in front of the camera. So it kind of bit me up for a while. But then, you know, I calmed down and got kind of, it's just an interview. Then once everyone left, like I said, it kind of chilled out a bit. But yeah, the first 20, 30 minutes, I was kind of like beating myself up, pacing back and forth, you know, going to my brother, like, you know, I've mucked it all up and stuff. So thinking it was the end of the world, basically, when it wasn't.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So you said you have three other siblings. Are you the youngest of everybody or no?
So I've got a wee brother, and then it's me, and then it's my sister's sister, then it's Luke. So Luke's the oldest.
So you have four siblings. And Luke's the oldest. So is Luke kind of the guy? So I have a brother who's 11 years older than I am. And my father was much, much older than the rest of us. So I always kind of looked up to my oldest brother as almost like a father figure.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Luke your older brother, or do you look up to him like kind of like a mentor?
Yeah, I mean, both, you know, to be honest. He's always there for me through the thick and thin. And obviously, like, me and Luke do the straw man stuff together and we run a business together. So we're always like 99% of the time we're together. So yeah, I look up to Luke, especially at my earlier days of straw man. I looked up to him more as like my hero instead of my brother, because he was the kind of one that did save me from going like maybe into foster care and not being a functioning member of society and stuff, you know. So I kind of have a lot of respect for him, you know. And but he even to this day, he makes sure I'm safe. He always puts me first before even like sometimes his wife and stuff, you know. And you know, that's a big kind of thing to do. So yeah, he is more than a brother to me. He's kind of like still a mentor and a hero as well for kind of helping me get to where I am today. So
I know you and your brother do. I know a lot of people watching probably don't watch Strongman. You and your brother actually compete in the World's Strongest Man together. And
yeah, so sorry,
go ahead. What I was going to ask was, what was it like when you finally overtook your brother?
The first, I think I overtook my brother when it was at Scotland's Strongest Man. He had won 5 titles, and I think he was going for a record of 6. Yeah. So I came in and stopped him from doing that, and then I won it again after that. And I mean, you know, Luke says as long as I beat him and the title stays in the family, it's fine, and I'm vice versa with him.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really kind of blew myself and Luke up was World's Strongest Man 2019, when myself and him both got to the World's Strongest Man final. So we were the first ever brothers to get to the final in the history of the sport. So that was a massive kind of thing for, you know, two brothers to do it, and also to be Scottish as well, because Scotland's not very good at most things. So it was nice to be able to, you know, go over there and kind of make a big statement. That was when I fought in Strongman. That's when I made my statement of coming 5th place at my second World's Strongest Man, and being there with Luke as well was kind of our statements of being the world's strongest brothers and stuff. So
I want to go back to that question for 1 second. I just want to ask you. So, because the reason I ask you is my oldest brother is kind of like my hero, my mentor as well. And I'm always chasing him. For me, it's different. We're not strong men and he's not a bodybuilder. But say like in business, for example, right? So I don't know if I'm ever going to catch him, but you caught your brother. So when your brother goes from being a hero and a mentor, and then you catch your hero, what is it? Not that there's any bad feelings. Of course there's no bad feelings. It's your brother, but is there a sense of satisfaction? Is there a sense of disappointment? Is it like, shit, he's not my hero anymore? Or like, what is the feeling?
I mean, there is a lot of satisfaction because, you know, Luke had, you know, 5 years in a row of being a champion, and I was second to him. I think it was 3 times in a row. So, you know, being second to your brother 3 times in a row does get like you want to like strangle them or do something, and then have that extra 2% the next 2 years and beat him. And then, like I said, World's Strongest Man as well, I kind of tipped him in that. And it's a big, massive relief as well to kind of know that, I mean, being 10 years younger as well, and you always want to get that one up on your brother. So we have some great banter with that. I keep my trophy in my car, and every time I come to the gym, I flash it to him and say, look, I'm the champion. So, you know, that's the good thing about us, because we're never really serious, you know, we always kind of thrive off each other's success and energy, business, strongman, life. And, you know, we're always, even like, it's like the orders we do, like how many merchandise orders can we pack in a day? You know, it's kind of, we're always having that kind of competitiveness, and I think that shows, and it's really kind of friendly. But yeah, he's obviously still my hero and mentor and stuff, and I really want him to kind of, you know, push up and get to like the top two in World Strongest Man next year and kind of fight with me as well. But we have such good kind of battles and training as well. I mean, Luke's one of the best log pressers in the world. I'm the best stone lifter in the world. So we really kind of go head to head and, you know, put all our heart into it. But yeah, it's fun being the younger brother, but also being the better brother now and the stronger brothers.
Does the competition extend itself past the gym? Like, I saw one of your videos, you guys were like racing to see how many who could crack 10 eggs first. So I'm just like, is that kind of shit go on all the time? Like, you and your brother always competing for dumb shit like that? Or is it like just in the gym?
Yeah, like that. Cause then, and also we did a 50 meter sprint, a few of them. And
really?
Again, but the thing is, Luke pulled or tore his hamstring on one and did a slight tear in the other. So he always tears his hamstring when he does that. And then we do like, so we're called the Spicy Stoltmans, but the thing is I don't like spicy food. So it's an ironic name. So we do a lot of spicy challenges on YouTube as well. So it's like, who can eat the spiciest peppers? Who can do the spiciest sauce? And although I don't like it, obviously I don't want to lose to him. So I kind of, you know, go over the top and super sorry.
So you do it anyways? You'll just do the spicy shit to beat him?
If Luke's doing like a pepper, I'll do a pepper in a bit just to beat him, you know? So, but it's us the same, like the rivalry is always in the gym, but we do it outside. Outside the gym, we have so much fun, but it's like I said, it's competitive, you know? It's like if he's going to do something for, you know, 2 or 3 meters, I'll do it for 4 or 5 meters. If he's, if we're like, you know, doing settings for YouTube and it's to involve food challenges or something, I don't like doing much food challenges, but if it involves him, I'll go all out to beat him, you know? So,
I'm going to show people, I want to show people your channels real quick.
Yeah, no problem.
So this is your YouTube page, the Stoltman Brothers. Yep. Everybody who's watching, go subscribe. There's some really good videos on here. So I watched some of these yesterday. They're actually really, really good. And you guys got a lot of challenges on here. And there was one video I watched yesterday that you guys bought your dad a pickup truck. I'm going to get into that in a minute, but I want to show people your Instagram page too. You can follow Tom Stoltman Official here on Instagram. It's just Tom Stoltman Official for those of you listening on audio. And there's you with the World's Strongest Man trophy. Is this back home in Scotland?
Yeah, that's back home, yeah, in Scotland, yeah.
What was the reception like from the public? Was there anybody that's not in the strongman community that like came and congratulated you for bringing it home for Scotland?
Yeah, man, it was bonkers. Like, I've never ever experienced the kind of attention I've ever had, this much attention before. It was just, as soon as I landed in UK, all the air hostess, all the security knew, and I was like, geez, you know, like usually they ask you the question, what do? You play rugby or do you play soccer and stuff? Or are you a WWE superstar? But then they knew exactly who I was. So it was nice to, you know, land in the UK. They knew exactly who I was. Traveling up the road, there was people beeping, stopping. There was flags of my name all the way up the road. Yeah, and then I came up to obviously where we live and there was people just waiting for me. And I was like, geez, this feels weird. You know, there was all the media there as well. So yeah, it was hectic, man. It was very good.
That's amazing, man. Do you ever, it's such a good story. Do you ever sit and think, like, we're just talking about your history as a child. Like, do you ever sit and think like where you came from to where you are?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I sat down the other night and was like, you know, from a boy who was like kind of autistic, not going anywhere in life, dropped out of school, dropped out of like every job I had, to then being the most successful in this sport. It doesn't feel real. It's kind of like a dream. Like, how did I go from that to this? And yeah, it's hard work and stuff, but it's also the support you've got, you know, like I always have that wee circle. I don't have the big circles. I have the wee circle with people. And that's, you know, like I always talk to my wife about it all and stuff, and my dad and my sister. And I'm like, no, how the heck have I gone from that to this? Because like, if you've seen videos and stuff when I was younger, you'd have been like, that's not Tom Stoltman. You know, that's what everybody says to me. It's like, that is, how the heck is that the same person? It's like, it just bamboozles me as well sometimes. You know, holding that trophy is a special feeling.
What, how long have you been married?
So I got married young. I got married at 21, so 22, 6 years. I got, my mum passed away 5 years ago of cancer. So
sorry, again, that's
a really big motivation for me as well to win worlds. And also in 2018, I said live on kind of Facebook, social media, though, that in 2021, I was going to win World's Strongest Man for my mum. I said to her, I'd make a three-year promise. 2019, I was going to qualify for the finals. I did that. In 2020, I was going to get on podium. I did that. And then in 2021, win. So the story has been, it's just bonkers how I've done that. Yeah. Like, I made a promise and kept it, and it did. It said exactly what I was going to do each year. So she's my biggest support. I mean, like, that with the pain thing, going back to that, like, the pain thing as well, like, I put myself through this pain, and my mum didn't have the choice to go through that pain. So again, that's why I can go now to that place where, you know, this ain't pain. This is me.
What do you mean?
Inflicting pain onto myself.
Can you
explain? Like in the gym and stuff. So
I know I'm in the gym, but can you explain to me what you mean exactly? Because you said your mom didn't get a chance. Do you mean to see you? Is that what you mean?
I mean, so my mom died of cancer. So, but she never got to see me win a trophy.
Yeah.
So she got to see Luke win, I think it was three Scotland's Strongest Mans, and she didn't get to see me win. So, like, you know, that kind of, you know, that was kind of like a, all right, oh, my mom's never seen me do it. She kind of passed away. I was like, right, I need to do something. So, yes, I used her as kind of energy and, you know, to control everything and just use her to kind of boom, get that power and stuff. And it really, really helped, you know. So,
you've been with your wife for, married for 6 years. How long have you been with her? When did you meet her?
I met her at 18. So, yeah, nearly 10 years nearly. So,
okay. So, how is your wife with any of your autism? Like, is she helpful? Like, obviously she's helpful, but I mean, is she more just accepting, or is she actually help you get through things?
Yeah, she's been unbelievable. Like I said as well, you know, like the thing I remember from kind of in my leaving school is that one of the teachers said to me, you're never going to move out your parents' house. You're never going to be successful. You're never going to do nothing. So, you know, obviously that stuck with me. But then when my kind of mum was obviously getting ill and dying and stuff, you know, I wanted to kind of give something back to her, because obviously she had done so much for me, and being the autism and stuff, she was obviously there for me more than she was any other siblings. So yeah, I met Sinead at 18 years old, and then I obviously told her, you know, I was autism and stuff, and was pretty scared because I thought she might have been like, right, I don't want to be with you, bye, you know, get out. But she was so supportive. I mean, she went to my first strongman comp, to now still obviously supporting me. She understands the sacrifice. She understands that, like, she needs to come onto my level as well. She studied a bit about autism when she met me. So she kind of, you know, she kind of wanted to help me and wanted to kind of basically care for me as well, as, you know, because I needed that extra support. But I got married at 21 with her as well. And it was kind of my mum's last ever kind of proper time seeing, you know, us together. And it was a really special feeling, because I said to mum, I wanted to either move out the house or get married. So, you know, I got married, and then she was getting iller and iller, and I was able to then move out the house and do two things that, you know, I wanted to show my mum. Because my mum said she didn't just want me to be a good strongman, she wanted me to be a good person and good, and, you know, provide and be successful in life. So yeah, I bet my wife is unbelievable. You know, Sinead's been through the thick and thin with me. So
how often is that thought? Because my father passed away, I think 8 years ago now, maybe more. It's been so long, shit. 2006, yeah. Actually a lot longer. It's been 2006. Yeah. So anyway, how often is that thought in your mind? Like, is your mom there every time you make a decision? Because I know for me, like, a lot of times when I'm struggling with something, I think about my father and what he would do.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, like, you know, the thing is with my wife as well, my wife and my mom were like kind of the same person as well. They really got on, which really gave me that warmth. So like when my mum passed, Sinead kind of, I was like, I was talking to my mum when I was talking to her. But yeah, I have a picture of my mum in my house that I kind of talk to if I'm struggling. So like, I'll, you know, if I'm making a decision or being like, right, I want to buy this. And I was like, right, wait, what would my mum think or say? So yeah, I kind of talk to her. Again, it also gives me comfort as well, you know, that kind of thing of seeing my mum there in the house gives me that bit of comfort. I got a tattoo as well, because her favorite flower was sunflower, so I have that on me as well, just to know that she's with me. But yeah, that's just my comfort thing. But yeah, my wife as well, she's the most supportive person ever. Like, that's for strongman, like, she sacrificed a lot as well to be with me and to let me do this sport and let me kind of grow as a person. You know, like, she could have said, oh, I don't want you to be a strongman when she met me. And then I would have never had this opportunity to be the best in the world and do stuff like this. But yeah, she's been unbelievable. And like I said, as well, my mom as well.
Can I ask you a weird question? If you, when your wife met you, she said, you know, I like you a lot, but I don't want you to do strongman. Would you have stopped?
No.
Okay. That's what I know. I'm just curious.
I said to kind of her, you know, I was like, look, I'm a straw man. This is what I do. If you don't like it, you can leave now, you know? I basically gave her the decision to kind of, I didn't want to get serious and then be like, right, I'm traveling all the time. I'm doing competitions in the gym. If you don't like it, you know, I didn't want her to wait a few years and be like, right, I don't like this sport. So I gave her that option straight away, you know, and she's thankfully stuck with me.
Yeah, it worked out. Well, you, so I want to go back to that, the video I watched of you and your how supportive and how much does your dad mean to you? Because I saw that you and your brother bought him a truck for Christmas. Was it last year that you did that?
Yeah, last year. Yeah, I mean, my dad, again, is, like I said, we're such a close family. We all live with like 10 minutes between each other. So, yeah, my dad, again, is like my mom, a massive, massive supporter. Since my mom's passed away, he's followed us around, you know, the country, the world, watching us compete. It's nice. It's how passionate and how, like, emotional he gets talking about myself and Luke, because obviously we're his sons. And, you know, if you said that to him, like, 20 years ago, your sons are going to be two guys that are going to be on top of the world lifting massive weights and being the world's strongest men, he'd have been like, oh shit, you know, that's not happening. These guys are from a small town with 4,000 people. They're not going to be able to do that. So he loves to kind of talk about us and, you know, like, just, he's just so proud of us. And it's so nice to see, you know, he tells all his kind of older friends, our family and stuff. And, you know, and, you know, he had a really, really old pickup that was falling to pieces and kept getting work done to it. And we were like, you know, I mean, it's only really a pickup. And we thought, you know, he's done so much for us and given us so much. He's, you know, he helped me fund my straw man at the start and stuff. So we were like, right, let's give him a pickup and make him kind of happy and stuff. And he was, I mean, you've seen it in the video himself. He was so emotional. He was so thankful. I mean, you know, like, it's just so nice to see his emotions come out and how thankful he was that we all did that for him. And that we all came together, you know, and it was just that was such a nice thing. I was so happy that we were able to do that, you know. We always wanted to give something back to my dad, and we were in that position now that we can actually do that. It feels so good, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I got emotional watching the video.
Oh yeah, yeah, a lot.
I'm just telling because I thought of my dad, like my oldest brother bought my dad a car a long time ago, his first car. So I remember the same, it was the same kind of look, the same feeling. And I could see the emotion in your dad's eyes. I was like, this is crazy. I can't watch it. I'd like fast forward. I'm like, I can't watch this. No, it's great, man. I think that's an awesome thing that you're doing. And you guys seem like a really close family. So it's really cool. But I want to get into some of the X's and O's of strongman, because I think people would be kind of shocked. So you said your maintenance calories are 8,000 calories a day.
Yeah, so, yeah, obviously when I'm not kind of close to a competition, 8,000 is what I need to kind of maintain this body weight and stuff.
So what about if you're trying to grow? You got to go up to 9,000, 10,000? Like, how many calories are you eating?
Yeah, so basically, let's just talk for worlds like the doors that just passed, because that was kind of my most, obviously, aggressive food site thing. So basically, when I was kind of starting the new year, just January to February, March time, it was 8,000, and then closer to the Bahrain comp March, it was up to 9, 9.5. So I stayed at about 9,500 through March, through the Bahrain thing. But then obviously coming back when I was, I'm fit and stuff, coming home, I then dropped back down to my maintenance to try and get, or just under maintenance, sorry, to get some fat off and stuff and, you know, the unwanted weight. And then I came back just, I was like 8,750 till about 6 weeks out from World's Strongest Man, and then that's when the calories increased. So then I went up to, like, I think it was near enough 9, 9.5, about 4 weeks out, because my sessions went, like, intense, really intense. So I needed to get that. I felt it, you know. He gave me that choice. I was like, no, I can't do 8,500. I need extra, because the sessions were serious. And then the most crazy thing is so I was 2 weeks out, and then, you know, I thought, oh, that's me done, 9,500, nice and easy, boom, boom, getting used to it. And then he said, right, I think we flew out 9 days before or 10 days before. And then he said, in America, I'll be going up to 10,000 plus. And that was, I mean, 10,000 calorie was, I felt that that was insane. I mean, you know, in America, they eat food like their portions are, you know, like massive compared to the UK. So like, you know, you order a burger in America and you're like, you order a burger in UK, you're like, this is all right. You order one over there and you're like, Jesus, you know, I have to get this done. And I was on, I mean, Five Guys, that's my favorite kind of fast food place over there.
Me too.
And, so I, for every day before leading up to Worlds, 10 days out, I was on 4 or 5 guy meals a day, plus plus the two shakes with them. And then I was on like meatballs, spaghetti.
Okay, wait. I have to stop you. Sorry to interrupt. What is the, like, what was a standard order at Five Guys?
Yeah, so it was the large burger, the large fries.
Yeah,
and 2 strawberry milkshakes every day, like so.
2 strawberry milkshakes. The milkshakes, milkshakes probably have all the calories.
Yeah, because I forgot how big they were because I've not been out to the States in a while, and I ordered the first one. I was like, I messaged Luke and was like, "Crap, are you wanting half this?" This is the UK. We're not in the UK anymore, and I kept forgetting because you know they overflow the chips and the burgers are like here. So yeah, I mean that was. That 10 days being out there was very intense as well because we weren't really moving around because you weren't allowed out the hotel because obviously the COVID situation. So, you know, being kind of in your room, not having this body, this food digest, you're like, it was so hard. But, you know,
I have to interrupt you again. I'm sorry. You ate that meal 4 times a day?
Yeah. So basically, breakfast at home is usually 10 eggs is my usual. But then, so in America, it was, I always started off with, it was like 6 pancakes, 3 or 4 eggs, and then kind of some potato chip things down at the buffet, whatever it was. And then after that, he would be like burger and chips at like 10 a.m., burger and chips at 12. And then obviously these are the days before I was competing, and then it was like 3 o'clock. And then he was like, but then it was like, I was going up to say 9 p.m., having my bolognese and all that. And then he would mention me at 10:30 saying, have a Five Guys. I was like, it's 10:30. I want to go to bed. So, yeah, I mean, I was in, you know, I was enjoying all that kind of food, but it was so hard to get down, you know. But
I don't
up there in the heat and stuff. So
I think I'm going to do your diet as a challenge one day, just like Fouad eats the Stoltman diet for one day. No, but
people were thinking like, you know, because I was getting messed up. Oh, why are you eating all that cat food? But you know, they don't realize it's fuel. You know, I didn't do that whole prep just for the last 7 days. I went like that extreme because it's fuel. I needed that fuel for it. If you think about it, World's Strongest Man is 5 days long, so that'll burn out quickly, you know, and especially the heat over there was unbelievable. Like, I've never, ever experienced heat in my life like that.
Where was it?
Sacramento, California.
So. Okay.
So, yeah.
I just...
It was like 110 degree Fahrenheit or something. They were saying 900.
Yeah, that's crazy. I can't... I think people, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, 10,000 calories, no big deal, but you know, some guys will do that as a challenge and they'll get through it no problem. But I'm like, you're doing that every single day. Like, that's the crazy thing is you're, and even in your maintenance, like 8,000 calories every single day is like, that's a lot of, like, how do you get through it and not, like you said 8,000 calories was no big deal. Like, it doesn't feel.
Yeah, I mean, I say that a wee bit as a lie. I mean, it is. I mean, when you're eating 10 eggs every single day for, you know, like how however long, you're kind of like, you get to the fifth day of the week, then you're kind of like, I've already had 40 eggs this week. Like, you know, this is, and then like, if you don't cook them right, or if you cook them a bit kind of and like not runny, they're a bit get hard, and you're like,
they're gross.
Wow, you know what? I know, because so it's 10 eggs, 2 sausages, 4 bits of toast I have. And so, yeah, so it's kind of like, I do struggle. I mean, breakfast I'm all right with, but it's more like the lunches and the dinners. I mean, my dinner can be like 400, 500 grams of meat. So like any steaks, any chicken, red meats, all that kind of stuff. And then about 400 grams of rice or 2 big potatoes. So you're like, I did it once with rice and I poured 400 grams of rice and I was like, holy crap.
It's like this.
I messaged my nutritionist. I was like, what the hell? Like, I was just spooning. And then it took me ages to say, don't really use rice. I use the potatoes because it's easier. But like, that rice meal was one of the worst things I've ever experienced in my life. It took me so long to eat. By the time I ate that, it was nearly time for the next meal. But yeah, it's the food for me, like a lot of people, like you said, say, oh, 8,000 calories is easy. Oh, you're so lucky you're a pro strongman. You're so lucky you're a pro bodybuilder or whatever. But like,
no.
You're like, come into my shoes for a day and then, or for a week and see how you can eat it. You know, it's like, it's not easy at all. The food for me is the hardest part.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, you know, because, you know, bodybuilders bulk up obviously in the off season to try and put on muscle. Yeah. I've never eaten 8,000 calories, but let's say I bulked up and then we diet down to get ready for a contest. And it's like, to me, being hungry is easier than stuffing my face. Like that bulk, that bulk period where you're eating more than you have to me, that's the most uncomfortable period. So I can imagine.
It's like me when I'm at last meal at night, I'm just playing with it on the fork, like, 10 mouthfuls to go. You know, sometimes, you know, I hold my hands up. Sometimes I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not, like you said, going to bed, feeling crap, feeling that really full. I'd rather just be more of an empty stomach and wake up hungrier because then I can actually eat. But, you know, when I get to that stage where I'm forcing myself to eat, I hate that stage. I hate that where I'm just not enjoying the food, doing this because I don't like that kind of stage, you know. So I never kind of try and get to that stage. You know, the good thing about my nutrition is I have like 5 or 6 protein options. So you know, like I can if I'm really kind of not hungry at lunchtime, I can have a shake instead of the meal. So that's a good kind of way to do it, you know, for me. So
I was gonna ask you, are there days like, for example, like in bodybuilding, we have like a day where I have a cheat meal where we can have whatever we want to eat, right? You're already having a bunch of food. So are there days where you're like, if you take a cheat meal, is it like actually a day off where you can eat less? Like, do you have days where you're allowed to eat 6,000 calories and give your body a break, or 4,000 calories or something? Yeah.
So Wednesdays is my recovery day. And that's when I, strip down the calories. So that's maybe even 2,000 off, maybe 1,000, something like that. So it's really like to give my body that rest, that recovery and stuff. And then with the cheat meals, it's weird because obviously after a competition right now, I'm trying to get my my insulin levels and that back to normal and stuff. So I'm not really... I'm only having one on the weekend.
Yeah.
But usually what happens is, as part of prep, a cheat meal will get added in every day before the gym to use that as fuel. So like it'll be the normal meals plus that extra cheat meal for the fuel. So it kind of varies.
That's crazy though, because I understand the concept of needing it for fuel, but I also think, like, what is a cheat meal? Like, your whole diet seems like it's... I wouldn't even want a cheat meal if I ate 8,000 calories. What does a cheat meal look like for you?
Yeah, so I mean, it's burger and chips.
I saw the one video you ate like what the fuck was it? It was like a shake, and then you had like 5 donuts or something like that.
That's kind of like part of it as well. So that's like a mid afternoon snack if I wanted it. But usually that gets taken out for the my meal before the gym when I'm allowed it is a burger and chips or a double burger and chips. You know, and I feel the difference in the gym when I have that, you know, the fuel, because right now I'm on the protein shake and like 2 donuts before the gym. And you can feel the difference from that to then having a good burger and chips, you know, like, but I love burger and chips and I never get bored of them. So I don't mind.
You don't have any stomach issues trying to train after eating like a double burger and fries or chips?
Yeah, that's a weird thing, because my big brother's opposite. Luke can't eat that food and train, but like I've done it before when I've come into the gym, stuffed a burger and chips and then 10 minutes later, I'm doing deadlifts. And I don't know how I think I've just got used to doing that, you know, because since I've been with his nutrition as well, he's always getting me before the competitions, before events to eat. So I'm always like kind of full. So I think it's just kind of got used to being that full going out to a contest and stuff. So
it could be age too, because I remember when I was your age, is how fucking old I sound. When I was younger, I could eat like a burger and then go train and probably have a great workout. But how old's Luke's probably like almost 40 now.
Yeah. Luke's 10 years older than me. He's 37.
So he's almost 40. So it gets a lot harder to process the food.
That's what he was saying, because even he said like 5, 6 years ago he could force food down, train. I'm just using it to my advantage.
So I just have a couple more questions before I go, because I don't want to keep you too long. But so to become a strong man, like in bodybuilding, you have to like go through the NPC. If you want to be an IFBB pro, you have to go through the NPC. You have to win nationals or one of the pro qualifiers. Then you get your pro status. So to be on the world to be part of the World Strongman show, like that show, that event, how do you get there? Like, do you have to win the Nationals of Scotland to get invited?
No, not Scotland. So you have to go to a bigger stage. So basically, there's a few different federations in Strongman. The main kind of one being Giants Live. So Giants Live is the one that you want to do to get to these kind of big contests, which is obviously World Strongman. And I mean, it is a bit kind of different because World Strongman kind of can select you if they like you, or can select you if you know, you've had good performances in the past and stuff, or this and that. But usually it's if you qualify, if you're like top two in a Giants Live competition in any one you do, you usually get automatically then, you know, put to the world. And also then again, like, there's 25 athletes that go out to World Strongest Man. I think if you get to the top 10, the final, usually you get an automatic invite back as well. So basically, if you're a finalist every year, you're kind of guaranteed a place back at World Strongest Man.
Okay.
And usually it is the same kind of 25 people that, you know, are out there. There may be a few new faces. Like, for example, if they want a kind of another African country in our setting, they'll maybe invite someone as a wild card just to make it a bit more kind of interesting and stuff.
Yeah.
So they have all different kind of ways to kind of get qualified for that kind of shows and stuff.
Yeah. So when I watch on TV, it's only 10 guys. So is the televised part only for the finalists?
So is that on American? Did you watch that?
If I watch it on YouTube, or I watch it on like...
Forgive me because I
probably don't watch enough to know, but ones I have seen, I usually only see the 10 guys. So is it like, does all 25 guys get television time, or is it just the finalists?
Yeah, usually, I mean, when it's on in the UK, it's usually, each day usually has, so there's five groups. So in the qualifiers, it's five people, five groups, 25 of them. And then there's weekends, the final. So usually it goes, group one is on a Monday, group two is on a Tuesday, group three, blah, blah, blah. Show some clips of that. Show maybe the top kind of athletes in each group.
Yeah.
And then every day there's a one group gets the television time.
Yeah.
And then it comes to the final on the weekend, which is like a bigger show. I mean, it's on in the States right now, I think. And I've been seeing World Stories Man promote it, and it's like the groups are getting their coverage. So like,
okay, so maybe
group two or something. Maybe on YouTube or something, whatever, the highlights. Maybe it's just the finalists, you know.
Like I said, I'm not versed enough in it to know. Yeah. But the other question I had was, and forgive me also if this is wrong, but when I watch the events, sometimes the events all are a little bit different. Like sometimes they're pulling a bus, sometimes they're pulling a truck, sometimes they're, you know, sometimes they're carrying jet skis, sometimes they're carrying motorcycles. Like, is it to Strongman kind of like change the design of the show, how they feel?
Yeah, so it's not just even with World Strongest Man, this is with like the Giants Live stuff as well. So I think for me, that's why Strongman is quite a hard sport to train for, because, you know, like one show could have a one-arm dumbbell press, then 4 weeks later, you could be going to a show with a log press. So you're kind of like, right, I need to get all this. So, yeah, World Strongest Man, every single year, every single comp show you do is different. And World Strongest Man this year was completely different. I mean, they had a train pool, which hasn't been seen in ages. They had kind of like massive whiskey barrels you had to load up, which is usually just kegs. So yeah, every year they do change it and make it kind of like this the hardest comp in the world, basically, you know. So we've done it where we've had to like load implements on sand, you've had to load implements in water, you've had to pick things up in water, run in water with them. Like you said, we've ran with motorcycles on our back, we've pulled monster trucks, we've done this. They test every single kind of bit of your body. And that's the kind of good thing about it. Because, again, as well, you don't get the events from World's Strongest Man till about 4 weeks before it. So you have to do guesswork. So you have to be like, right, last year they had this pressing event, so they might have this again. So you kind of have to guess your training as well. So that's a hard thing as well, because, you know, 4 weeks before the comp is not a lot of time to be like, right, I've got this to do now, you know?
So, yeah, I was just going to ask, because I'm like, I was going to ask you, like, when do you find out? So 4 weeks before, you find out, like, if there's a keg toss or whatever, and then you got
to
start.
Everything. So 4 to 6 weeks, it's like you find out that. You find out what group you're going to be in, who's going to be in your group. So that's why, like, with World, you have to be, like, you have to train everything. So you have to, like, on your event day on the weekend or whenever it is, you have to train like 8 events because you don't know what's going to be in it, you know. So
yeah, when you get set up in your groups, do you kind of know who's the best at what event in those groups? Like, is there strategy? Yeah, is there a strategy to how you're going
to? That's the advantage as well of having groups early, because you kind of be like, right, oh, he's not the best at this. He's got that, so he's going to lose points in that. So yeah, you can study the groups and be like, right, I'll train a bit harder at this event, you know. So
yeah. So what's next for you, man? That's what I want to ask you. Where does the Arnold Classic Strongman rank in the importance of strongman?
Probably, it's the heaviest show in the world in strongman. So world strong, like, so yeah, it's heavy, the heaviest show in the world, and it's probably just as prestigious as World's Strongest Man.
Really? So are you doing are you going to do the Arnold's?
Yeah, I've been invited to Arnold, Ohio, but obviously I think this year has been cancelled for strongman stuff, so. Okay. I think it's going to be next year I'll do it. But yeah, because, like, for example, Sedrunas Savickas, he's one of the greats of strongman. Yep. And the reason he's so great is because he's won Arnold's like 4 or 5 times and Worlds 3 or 4 times. So yeah, he's like one of the greats there. But yeah, Arnold's is a very, very heavy show, like the heaviest show you'll get in the world. So
when you say heavy show, do you mean like it's popular, or you mean heavy like the weights are heavier?
Like statically heavy, like you don't get any show near it. Like World's Strongest Man, for example, like World's Strongest Man log presses are like 150 kilograms. There, it's like 180, 200 for as many reps you can. You're walking with like
bonkers weight. Shouldn't it be standard though? Why do they do that? Why is it heavier? Just more impressive?
I think it's always been like that, isn't it? Like, I think it's just, again, that prestigious title of, you know, we're the heaviest show in the world. Come and see what you can do, you know, kind of like that.
So. That's very cool. So, lastly, before you go, how is business, and what businesses do you guys have? I know you have merchandise and you have your own gym. Is the gym private or public?
Yeah, so we have our gym is public. It was private, but now we've opened up to the public. We've got merchandise, obviously the YouTube kind of stuff. We're going to be opening up a kind of recovery center up here in the Highlands. So
that's awesome.
We can be able to like not get like all, because up here is not much opportunity for that. So then we can do that, and hopefully as well, we're taking out a documentary at the end of the year on Netflix.
That's pretty sweet.
Which we're working, yeah, and then hopefully our book as well, that's in the talks. So there's a lot of things in the kind of back burner right now as well. So we're just going to kind of see what it takes us, you know. But right now, business is going good. You know, strongman's going good, and I just kind of have to ride the wave for a while and see what happens.
Hey, last question before you go. What when you talk about recovery, do you do ice baths at all or no?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at your YouTube, you'll be there's some serious ice baths there. We've done actually a lot, which is one of the coldest in Britain. We did I think it was -4 or 5 degrees. We did ice swimming, so we went under the ice and swam up, and it was one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life. Like, oh man, we do lots of like extreme stuff like that. Yeah, but we do hot and cold every night as well, basically.
Do you every night?
Yeah, every night. So we've got a set up in the gym as well. So we don't do that at the beaches. We've got hot tub, cold tub. We do every night.
Yeah. I've been considering getting one because I've been, you know, talking to a lot of people about the benefit of ice bath and all that. So if you're doing it, it's got to be good.
I mean, I thought it was like I thought it was a myth at first. I was like, how's going into cold water going to help me mentally and keep some inflammation down? But yeah, by my God, that's my go-to recovery. It's that, you know, it's unbelievable.
I did ice baths for a long time. I just never did the hot, cold back and forth.
Yeah.
Is the contrasting work better?
Yeah, contrast 100%. Yeah, 100%. Tom, and it's nice to just relax in the hot tub after for 10 minutes.
Yeah, just stay there, yeah. Tom, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's a very honorable thing for me, or it's an honor for me to have you on, because you're the fucking world's strongest man. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. Be part of this, like, so
yeah, I just want to say thank you, and maybe as you get ready for your next competition, you'll come back on again and we can talk about it and see how things are going.
Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, anytime, just give me a message and be cool.
Is there anybody you want to thank or any sponsor you want to promote before we go?
I mean, yeah, just obviously my wife, my family, you know, all the team that's behind me. I mean, I've sat on my sponsors, but they kind of know who they are as well. Just everyone that's kind of made this happen, you know. It's although it's an individual sport, you have that support base that helped you get to where you are. So just a big thank you to every one of them guys, and also all my fans as well. If it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be able to kind of, you know, make my name how it is today as well. So,
okay, man. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate the time, and we'll talk again soon.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you very much. Cheers.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.